to be American.
11 trillion approximately went to foreign central banks.
They have no loyalty. The notion of a U.S. company or a U.S. bank is antiquated, you know, because essentially most institutions, including small businesses today, go where the business is, wherever it is, any place in the world.
They're foreign banks. It's just, you can't even make this stuff up. Listen,
who profited?
Brazil, so we could.
So no, there's a problem with the phrase that says what's good for the banks is good for the country?
Well, it isn't, because right now the productive purpose that banks even used to serve is no more their business line. Their business line is to have this backing from the federal government, which they've amassed particularly over the last few decades by deregulating a lot of rules that kept them from the pool of deposit money, the pool of loans that they use. They use other people's money to speculate with, to go into these derivatives markets, to back these hedge funds, to expand internationally in places where they have no accountability to those nations or to their American home nation. So there is no more accountability in the financial system. There's no more personal accountability. There's no demand, like in some cases there were from certain presidents. LBJ, for example, he said to bankers, you know what, if you want lower taxes on what you're doing, you got to help me with my great society, my plans to help the individuals in the country. You have to give back. There's no accountability.
The social role played by a bank, which is to take money from people who have it, lend it to people who need it so that they can build businesses, create jobs, improve society, invest in their homes, invest in their buildings and so forth, has become increasingly peripheral to the business of banks, which essentially have discovered a way to make a lot of money off of the churn of money circulating through the system, making it in milliseconds. But, you know, there are other examples in the world. You know, Canada didn't go through this banking crisis. Canada had a regulated system. Did that mean there were no banks and no hedge funds and no investment of Canada? Of course not. But they had a balance. Sweden went through a crisis in the early 90s, looked at the crisis. They have a society that's very much oriented towards social benefits. They responded with the restructuring of their banks that actually ultimately became a model for us after our problem. So it is possible to balance social desires with having a functioning financial center.
What they've been doing is, rather than helping individuals restructure their mortgages or small business loans or things that they perceive to be risky, they're instead increasing the amount of leverage or borrowing they're giving to the hedge funds, who then get to go into international debt.
The earnings last year of the top 25 hedge funds guys came out, and it was $21.5 billion for 25 guys.
The top three, something like $6-7 billion.
Right. Yeah. But the top 25 averaged $1 billion in their 2013.
So that says what to you, David?
Insanity? I mean, look, there is no economic reason to pay them that much, because I suspect they would have worked just as hard, say, for $100 million rather than $1 billion for 1 year's compensation. And there's no social reason. In fact, it's socially catastrophic.
So how is it that they're making that much money?
They're leveraging cheap money into rising markets.
Cheap money, which is the government is the one giving out on zero interest rate.
Compared to some rates in the market, right? You know, I mean, they were at very low rates. But then the Fed goes from being a lender of last resort, helping out private financial institutions, or even assisting in helping out AIG and Bear Stearns to actually making markets, right? And then in this case, they're kind of serving as a market maker, allowing for banks to make loans and agreeing that these loans would be bought.
Since then, it seems that, or presumably, when you read the mainstream press, is that now the bankers are under scrutiny, now there are regulations.
They are and they're not. The sizes of their balance sheets are bigger. They have more assets, they have more deposits. The big six banks have more concentration than they've ever had before. So all that stuff is like smoke around the edges.
Well, and also,
so what are you saying?
This entire
that too big is now
cycle.
Becoming bigger?
Yeah. It is bigger.
It is bigger.
It
too
is
big
bigger.
Is now bigger.
Yeah. It's absolutely
Hence,
bigger.
Hence, there's more too big to fail banks today than there were before the crisis.
Well, the big six banks are bigger than they were before.
Well, it wouldn't make sense if they had actually tried to fix it.
Right,
but they didn't try to fix it.
And hence?
So it actually does make... Well, because size... Yeah, look, I went to see Bob Rubin when I was doing
Bob
my last
Rubin meaning
book, the former Treasury Secretary. And I went to see him when I was doing my last book. And I said, you know, have you thought about this whole, you know, too big to fail thing? Did we go too far? And he said, you don't understand. Too big to fail is not an aberration from the system.
It is a system.
It is the system.
That's true.
I was at an event in Davos, a lunch. Jamie Dimon had the day before been fined $20 billion at J.P. Morgan, and he stood up, Davos, the world elite. Massive applause. Yeah. Good for you, Jamie. You know, you're standing, and he got a raise. He got a raise after getting a $20 billion fine because they just think of that as a cost of doing business. They say there is no accountability in the context of this thing.
What's happening now is that there's been a fortification of the power that the largest institutions have.
And you seem to think that it's more likely than not for some of these big bankers, for example, in Goldman Sachs, to be in government rather than just influences from the outside.
That's just the fact. John Whitehead was the head of Goldman Sachs. Then in the Reagan administration, the Bush administration, he went became Deputy Secretary of State. Robert Rubin was that of Goldman Sachs. He became the President, Chief Economic Advisor, became the Secretary of the Treasury. Steve Friedman was the head of Goldman Sachs. He became George Bush's Chief Economic Advisor. John Corzine was the head of Goldman Sachs. He became a senator and a governor. Hank Paulson was the head of Goldman Sachs. He became the Secretary of the Treasury. You know, I mean, after a couple of those things, you stop thinking it's an accident, you know, and the ideology, the culture of a place like Goldman Sachs becomes the ideology of the senior policymakers in the United States government.
So the Tom Perkins system is you don't get to vote unless you pay a dollar of taxes. But what I really think is it should be like a corporation. If you pay $1 million in taxes, you should get 1 million votes.
It is as if there's been a coup d'etat. Call it the banker's coup, leaving the government of the United States with one single purpose, to serve finance.
And the mortgage loans on your broken down shacks. Yeah, they've been foreclosed by Goldman Sachs.
Is that it? Is the rule of the oligarchs the order of today? Is there any resistance? Can it succeed or will it fail?
Well, it's kind of crummy and it's really shoddy that the 1% owe most everybody. And the 1% of that 1%, hell, they own the 1% as well. This land is their land. This land ain't ours, friend. It's owned by...
After the bailouts, a public backlash seemed inevitable.
Now that you're here, and
it feels dead right now. Definitely the space was alive. It had a space for dreams. It had a space for people to step out of their alienation.
And now there seems to be almost fashionable to talk about inequality with recent publications of the Princeton study and of the Piketty book.
I think the inequality got put on the table because of Occupy. Inequality is a euphemism for class. The people here, we're privileged people, largely white. It's a class that got demoted, right? The dream stopped working, and it stopped working so fast to the point that people found themselves taking to the street, politicized even though they weren't politicized. And we've identified the enemy, and it's 1%. And that 1% can probably be reduced to 400 to 500 families that own probably the largest five media corporations in the United States.
What happened to that American dream?
The American dream is an American nightmare right now. And I think people are slowly waking up. I think Occupy rang the bell. And I think you're going to...
Occupy may have rung the bell.
It's not a lie.
And for a moment, the old economic consensus may have been shattered. But as the protesters were cleared from the streets, the oligarchs consolidated their power. According to Forbes, the Waltons are the richest family in America. The Kochs are the second richest. along with a handful of powerful allies, they had an audacious plan to redraw America's electoral map. The Supreme Court lifted limits on campaign spending, and suddenly the doors were flung open. The billionaires used front groups like Americans for Prosperity.
Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Americans for Prosperity is responsible by for the content of this advertising.
Nebraska. Americans for Prosperity is responsible for the content of this advertising.
One of the states they targeted was North Carolina. It had been controlled by Democrats for over a century.
Unemployment in southeastern North Carolina.
Their money poured in. Attack ads ran day and night.
Americans for Prosperity is responsible for the content of this advertising.
When the election was over, the most radical Republican legislator in the South was in charge. They cut taxes for the rich, cut unemployment insurance, cut union rights. They blocked government medical care for 500,000 poor people. They made it more difficult to vote. And they changed the election districts to guarantee Republican domination for the foreseeable future.
The Democrats have 4 seats now. They will keep those. But the likelihood is the Republicans are going to control the legislature for the foreseeable future. And so
Dallas Woodhouse ran the Koch brothers group, American for Prosperity, during the 2010 and 2012 election campaigns. He now has a new political action committee called Carolina Rising.
So we would never talk about our donors. We've seen, harassment of people who give to causes, so we don't do that. But of course, if you want to write me a check, I'll keep your confidence as well. You know what happened to the Democrats? For once, out of 100 years, they got beat. And now, they cry to the refs. They whine and moan to left-leaning media. They cry and moan. They do what losers do. They cry to the refs. That's what they do.
According to Dallas, even if they do it in secret, hiding behind front groups, the more billionaires spend, the better it is for democracy.
The more debate, the better. I hope there are a gazillion TV ads run. I mean, it seems like to me that people pick on Charles Koch and they pick on Art Pope, but the Democrats have their guys that run a lot of TV ads.
And in a world of TV campaign ads, money is speech.
Of course it is.
We're here to reclaim the house as the people's house.
Reverend William Barber started protesting in 2013, he was arrested. But he went back, and it became a movement to fight and try to take their state back.
The Supreme Court now has become an enabler to those who want to buy our democracy. And they're creating an environment where it's as though people are being treated like things and corporations are being treated like people. And they made a distinctive decision about how they would hold on to power in this nation, and that was they would go into the states. And what many liberals and progressives have got to understand is it's one thing to win congressional seats and one thing to win the presidency, but more importantly is what goes on in these state houses, because what goes on in state houses determines voting rights, it determines redistricting lines for your Congress, and that's why you have to have a moral movement, because down through history, the only thing that's been able to break the back of that kind of economic domination have been moral movements. People in the street, people being willing to engage nonviolently, people being willing to speak out from our pulpits, people rising up.
Reverend Barber's coalition is impressive. The Monday protests have drawn as many as 80,000 people and have spread to hundreds of cities around the state. But the Koch brothers' money and their newly drawn electoral map may insulate them from the pressures in the street.
In a democracy, you don't force things on people. These are elected governments. There they make the laws. Oligarchs don't make the laws.
Oligarchs pay politicians to make the laws. That's what we have in the United States.
So you think it's democracy for hire?
Yeah, it's definitely democracy for hire.
Can there be change? Is there a real possibility of change?
A crisis, some kind of a crisis that shows...
But the last crisis strengthened the oligarchs.
Exactly. It needs to be... Look, I think the reaction to the last crisis may be totally different from what you think it was. I think the which was, this is a big crisis, the biggest since the Great Depression. I think the reaction history may look at it, the last crisis, was that it was not big enough. It was not big enough to produce the changes that were necessary in the political system, the economic system, the banking system.
Interesting crossing to this side of things. And I'm not talking about the mooning and the whining. I'm talking about how things seem so much rosier, brighter, super confident, even fun, life of gold, if you're into this kind of thing. Because even if it's not the end of history, it's certainly the triumph of capitalism over communism. But I ask you, what is it that you want to do with billions that you can't do with millions? Because you see, when we talk about billions, we're talking about power, about the oligarchy and the destruction of democracy. In a civilization, it's the society that defines wealth, not the few wealthy that define society and democracy. Because that's what matters. Until next time.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855, the number 2, keep it, today.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants. and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Welcome back to the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Thursday, September 15th, 2016. And we were listening to the video Empire, the Rise of the Oligarchs, published back in 2014 on YouTube. Earlier in the first hour of today's broadcast and first segment of the second hour. And so there you have it. And as I said before we ran that video, don't be drawn into the contrived conflict of the Marxist rhetoric that abounds these days and would pit Americans against Americans. Let's not have a Civil War redo, this time not just about contrived race conflict, and the original Civil War really wasn't about that. Congress was the arbiter of states and should have been able to settle the issue, but Congress was strangely silent originally on that matter. So now we have the re-emergence and re-fomenting of a contrived race conflict along with our own Bolshevik Revolution and October Revolution that's being fomented, and the clash of the bourgeois and the proletariat, so on and so on. And in true Marxist fashion, in the same fashion that Karl Marx turned the French Workers' Party against itself and those people against themselves, in fact, we are seeing the same thing here in America. Folks being encouraged to rise up and, you know, workers of the world unite, that kind of Marxist rhetoric, throw off the chains of the bourgeois, et cetera, et cetera. And there is more to the story there, but really, we need to get back to being introspective and following the exhortations of folks like Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington in their various farewell addresses, inaugural addresses, et cetera. And I've mentioned some of those words in the past few days, but I want to continue with Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom and get to that introspective moment, that point that he makes. And again, just to back up from yesterday, from chapter one, the abandoned road of the road to serfdom, Hayek wrote in chapter one, "We are ready to accept almost any explanation of the present crisis of our civilization except one. The present state of our world result of genuine error on our own part, and that the pursuit of some of our most cherished ideals has apparently produced results utterly different from those which we expected. While all our energies are directed to bring this war to a victorious conclusion, and as I mentioned, obviously that's in reflection of World War II, but in this case we could think of the conflicts, the various conflicts that the United States military-industrial complex is immersed in these days. While all our energies are directed to bring this war to a victorious conclusion, it is sometimes difficult to remember that even before the war, the values for which we are now fighting were threatened here and destroyed elsewhere. And again, remember the changes that were taking place at the turn of the 20th century, the influence of the Fabian socialists, the shift, really, by the technocrats, the early 20th century progressive era architects, the pre-FDR and FDR and even post-FDR era, the administrative fourth branch being formalized in the passage of the Administrative Procedure Act 1946 and so forth, those kinds of things. And then, of course, the Rees Committee looking back in the early 50s at the genesis of the nonprofit, the big nonprofit foundations at the turn of the 20th century, and concluding that, yes, in fact, Virginia, there was a conspiracy, and the big nonprofit foundations were, in fact, funding largely un-American and even anti-American rhetoric and steering America into a collectivist mindset and ideology from a rugged individual's ideology. So stick around. We'll have more on that when we come back right after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months, and your doctor will say, "I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you." Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, I'll make you a deal. Give me 60 seconds and I'll give you directions to the Fountain of Youth. Okay, I'm joking. Well, kind of joking. No fountains, but youth, I got Nature's Youth and their premier anti-aging product, Nature's Youth RSF. With your sensible diet and exercise plan, Nature's Youth RSF can help you look and feel better. RSF is an all-natural amino acid supplement that supports your body to naturally increase HGH levels without any synthetic hormones. And elevated HGH levels can contribute to increased energy, improved libido, reduced body fat, and improved exercise capacity. Let's be honest, who doesn't want to look and feel younger? Visit the newly designed website at naturesyouth.com or call 800-333-6923. That's 800-333-6923 and like them on Facebook and you'll be included in contests and exclusive offers. What a deal. Oh, speaking of deals, my time's about up. 800-333-6923 or naturesyouth.com. Who needs a fountain anyway? Call today.
As a regular listener to Republic Broadcasting, you certainly understand the times and circumstances that we are living in. You certainly understand that the good times are over, and you certainly understand what we are heading for. Though we do not know what exactly is going to happen, we must assume that it's going to be a disaster. Are you prepared for that mess? Go to www.bugoutpanama.net and get the necessary information on our growing community of awake and prepared individuals, just like you. At www.bugoutpanama.net, you will learn how we are preparing on our farm, Finca Baiano, for what is coming. Emigrate while you still can to our village, where survival is of the utmost importance. Prepare. Don't despair. At www.bugoutpanama.net.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. Real quick, the phone lines are open if you want to comment on the video or the general overarching subject matter. And the 800 number is still down. Here are a few numbers you might want to write down. You can call, to call in, you can call 512-716-1603. 1883 or 1897. So once again, the area code and prefix are the same for all three numbers, 512-716, and then the last four numbers of each of the three lines you can call in are 1603, 1603, 1883 or 1883, and 1897 or 1897. So that's 512-716-1603, 512-716-1883, or 512-716-1897. So call those in succession if you want to call in. If the first one you call is busy, call the second, and so on. Rinse and repeat as needed. So back, Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, again, originally published back in 1944, reflecting on the rise of fascism and Nazism and Hayek's own experience with that in Austria, and then coming to the United States, America, and England, and seeing that the forces shaping the ideology, the prevailing kind of social and cultural ideology, were very similar, if not identical, to those that gave rise to Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, etc. So, continuing from chapter one, The Abandoned Road, we still think of the ideals which guide us and have guided us for the past generation as ideals only to be realized in the future, and are not aware of how far in the last 25 years they have already transformed not only the world, but also our own countries. And this, again, kind of gets back to the Fabian socialists, the early 20th century progressive era architects of America, and so on. We still believe that until quite recently, that was in 1944, we were governed by what are vaguely called 19th century ideas or the principle of laissez-faire. Although until 1931, England and America had followed only slowly on the path on which others had led, even by then they had moved so far that only those whose memory goes back to the years before the last war, as the First World War, know what a liberal world has been like. The crucial point, and I should add, perhaps, or just kind of restate, in parallel to that concept that Hayek mentions, consider in the same years in America the transition spoken of by Thomas McNeice, again, the assistant director of research to the Rees Committee to investigate the foundations back in the mid-50s, in his report to the Rees Committee, when he said that the change took place so drastic during the 4 years from 1933 to 1936 constitute a revolution. It was, in Thomas McNeice's opinion, as a second American. Literary device or exaggeration, the Bill of Rights. That's what Senator McCarran said on the Senate floor in 1946 as Congress passed Senate Bill 7, which became the Administrative Procedure Act. He said, it is a Bill of Rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose, and now millions, obviously, the vast majority of Americans, whose affairs are controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. Now, I ask you, does the Supreme Court, does the White House, does Capitol Hill come to your door? No. Who comes? DHS, DSHS, DOL, Social Security Administration, IRS, FEMA, et cetera, et cetera. The agencies, the alphabet soups, are what come to your door. It's what touches the citizen, as they say. So continuing from Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, the crucial point of which our people are still so little aware is, however, not merely the magnitude of the changes which have taken place during the last generation, but the fact that they mean a complete change in the direction of the evolution of our ideas and social is key, again, to grow from heavy, as much as I'd like not to, is a valid point. If we're pruning the leaves and the roots remain the same, we're just going to grow more of the same leaves. In fact, if we're pruning evil, all we're doing is we're making it more refined and more prolific. So that's the problem with the political climate of today in America and beyond, economic and so forth. We heard in the video. For at least 25 years, before the specter of totalitarianism became a real threat, we had progressively been moving away from the basic ideas on which Western civilization has been built. But this movement on which we have entered with such high hopes and ambitions should have brought us face to face with the totalitarian horror has come as a profound shock to this generation, which still refuses to connect the two facts. Yet this development merely confirms the warnings of the fathers of the liberal philosophy which we still profess. Founding fathers in America. We have progressively abandoned that freedom in economic affairs without which personal and political freedom has never existed in the past. Although we had been warned by some of the greatest political thinkers of the 19th century, by de Tocqueville and Lord Acton, that socialism means slavery, and Bernie Sanders is an ardent and avowed socialist. Remember, he is the answer to so many people. So continuing, we have steadily moved in the direction of socialism, and now that we have seen a new form of slavery arise before our eyes, we have so completely forgotten the warning that it scarcely occurs to us that the two things may be connected. And, you know, as far as slavery is concerned, it's interesting. For a mind bender, consider for a moment, when we think of slavery, in the let's say, 19th century, 18th and 19th centuries. For American history, we think of slavery, and it's a despicable practice and reprehensible. It's sensationalized in our contemporary history, but when you think about it, to oversimplify, there were a number of slaves who were in care of. They had, you know, the basics of Maslow's hierarchy of needs: food, clothing, and shelter. And sure, there were tolerable conditions and brutality and so forth. But when you think about the fact that, well, for example, Harriet Tubman was reputed to have said, "I freed thousands of slaves. I could have freed thousands more if they'd known there were slaves." Then there's kind of a disparity in the historical record that we hear and the veracity of the things we hear. So the point is, a number of slaves had food, clothing, and shelter. You compare that to the Walmart workers of today who work. It's basically the working poor. It's indentured servitude if they can never break free from that, and they can't even provide for the basic needs of themselves or their family. Is that any better than slavery? Just a parallel, just drawing a parallel there, and certainly not saying that one is better than the other. They're both despicable, is the point. Continuing, how sharp a break, not only with the recent past, but with the whole evolution of Western civilization, the modern trend toward socialism means, becomes clear if we consider it not merely against the background of the 19th century, but in a longer historical perspective. Again, that short curve, kind of like the autism curve that the federal government wants to use. No, it's not much different year to year. Well, let's use a longer curve again. But I digress. We are rapidly abandoning not the views merely of Cobden and Bright, of Adam Smith and Hume, or even Locke and Milton, but one of the salient characteristics of Western civilization as it has grown from the foundations laid by Christianity and the Greeks and Romans. Not merely 18th century liberalism, but the basic individualism inherited by us from Erasmus and Montaigne, from Cicero and Tacitus, Pericles, Thucydides, progressively relinquished. This is the problem. This, to me, parenthetically, is what Reagan was talking about in his Time for Choosing speech on the Goldwater campaign trail, presidential campaign trail, back in 1964. The Nazi described the National Socialist Revolution as a counter-Renaissance, spoke more truly than he probably knew. It was the decisive step in the destruction of that civilization which modern man had built up from the age of the Renaissance, and which was, above all, an individualist civilization. Individualism has a bad name today, and the term has come to be connected with egotism and selfishness. And that point I brought out in full view with the communitarians basically saying that, admitting that they think that this selfish individualism is the cause of societal decline. Continuing, individualism has a bad name today, and the term has come to be connected with egotism and selfishness. But the individualism of which we, in contrast to socialism and all other forms of collectivism, has no necessary connection with these. Of that individualism, which from elements provided by Christianity and the philosophy of classical antiquity really developed during the Renaissance and has since grown and spread into what we know as Western civilization, are the respect for the individual man qua man, that is, the recognition of his own views and tastes as supreme in his own sphere. However, narrowly circumscribed, and the belief with use and abuse that one must hesitate to employ them to express the ideals for which they stood during that period. Tolerance is perhaps the only word which still preserves the full meaning of the principle which during the whole of this period was in the ascendant, and which only in recent times has again been in decline to disappear completely with the rise of the totalitarian state. Exactly. They want to eviscerate those terms of liberty, freedom, and tolerance, etc., from language. They want to just erase them from the pages of time in Orwellian fashion. The gradual transformation of a rigidly organized hierarchic system into one where men could at least attempt to shape their own life, where man gained the opportunity of knowing and choosing between different forms of life, is closely associated with the growth of commerce. And I'll stop there. There's much more, but you know, on that point, I would only add that the technocrats, with their new international economic order, reshaping and shifting that point about commerce that Hayek lucidly makes. So hopefully that's some perspective to kind of reorient us toward the ideals of rugged individualism, that Renaissance concept of the recognition of man qua man, as Hayek puts it. So with that said, let's go to the phones real quick and grab Renee and Carolina. Renee, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, I hope Fred's listening. I got one for him on YouTube. It's called The Power Principle. It's almost 4.5 hours long, okay? But it's called The Power Principle because really everything does boil down to power. There's a saying, power grinds down those who do not have it. You know, the colonists that came to America were white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who were trying to escape the tyranny of other white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Okay.
So, but the point that Hayek made was, I think, well observed, in that they had already gone far down this road of socialism themselves. It just had gone further than they had wanted, and so they, you know, escaped.
Well, but the thing is, what happens is with power is people who are the victim of power, often when they gain power, become a person who abuses power again, as we did with the Indians. You know, and the thing is, I don't think anybody can deny that we have not treated them fairly, and it continues today with that pipeline, who, when white people complained about the pipeline being a threat to their water supply, it was then moved to go through the Indian reservation, and and they have a lot more trouble getting the court trying to rule in their favor than the white people did, you know. So the thing is, and this has been all through time, and I can tell a person's character and how they react to the whole Indian problem, but they need to realize is that is one of the best examples. Look at what they do to them, because they're working their way down to you. And so the thing is, instead of like saying stuff like, if we hadn't done it to them, somebody else would have. I mean, that's like I hear some of the most horrible rationalizations, because there was a lot of land here, and they could have been more generous. They'd give them the scraps, and then when they'd figure out there was a resource on it, they'd say, oh, we want that back too. And even though they had treaties, which were legal contracts, they would break them. Of course, the law enforcement courts and everything would do nothing about it. That's the same thing that our country is going around the world and doing about land and resources today. They get less obvious about it. They know how to get more sneaky about it, where they're they don't do it as overtly. They do it more covertly. But that is what's going on, and they're working their way to us. So I think people need to have a little more sympathy for the Indians, because, like I said, you can learn from it. Don't make excuses from it. Learn from it, because that is what's coming our way. And how they flip history. One of the things that annoys me to death is the whole term we were all brought up on called Indian giver. As somebody who, like, gives something then takes it back. You know what? Because and this will hack people off, like say, and if you're not one of those people, don't get hacked off about this. But that's who was in total control at that time in the Indians. It's like, you know, so the people who won and wrote
history. In psychology, they call that projection.
Yeah, it should have been wasp givers, not Indian givers, because it's the reverse.
Sure. See you around, folks. Right back.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
While the large majority of Americans have never heard of cryptocurrency, it is the medium of exchange of the future that has already begun. On the other hand, the large majority of RBN listeners are very aware of the corruption within the Fed and the trillions in counterfeit money and credit it has created. Well, would you like to do something about this? OneCoin, the fastest growing company of any kind in world history, will pay you to help do away with the Federal Reserve. Henry Ford didn't invent the automobile, but he surely developed many great improvements in the industry. In 1927, talking pictures made silent movies obsolete overnight, and email has practically done away with the need for a fax machine. With cryptocurrency, Bitcoin became the pioneer in 2009. But now OneCoin, as the first ever gold-backed cryptocurrency, has moved to the top of the industry in only 2 years, and its impact on the financial world could be devastating to the Fed. Bill Gates and Richard Branson and all the jillionaires are already acknowledging that this system of paying for goods and services is becoming what will be recognized as the new worldwide reserve currency. For more information, call Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911. Again, that's Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Radio broadcast, and we are kind of reflecting on the ideological shift that has taken place over the particularly over the course of the 20th century in America, and a shift really from individualism to collectivism. But what does that mean? We're on the phones. We have Renee in North Carolina on the phone, and Renee, the 2 points that you made, you know, about the fact that we could learn, and that folks who, in, you know, paraphrasing your words, cry or balk at the abuse of power and tyranny become ruthless, tyrannical, and oppressive themselves when they get into power. It's almost cliche. It's so true. And you and I have talked about that. You bring up good points, and we've talked about that specifically when I bring up pedagogy of the oppressed and the oppressor-oppressed paradigm, and how Paulo Freire aptly points out that usually the oppressed see in the oppressor their model for manhood, as he puts it. And then once they have the opportunity, as you pointed out, they become oppressive themselves because they don't know any better. And that's kind of a continuum of growth, I would say. You know, and hopefully they grow out of that. But as he pointed out, you can't find the answers in that paradigm. So I agree with you. I think we should learn. And if we incorporate what Hayek pointed to, the essential features of that individualism, as he puts it, from elements provided by Christianity and the philosophy of classical antiquity, since grown around the world to what we know as Western civilization, those principles are man qua man, as he puts it, that is the recognition of his own views and tastes as supreme in his own sphere. Those are the ideas that we see kind of embodied in the First Ten Amendments, what we call the Bill of Rights to the Constitution, and the recognition of his own views and tastes as supreme in his own sphere, however narrowly that may be circumscribed, as Hayek puts it. And I mentioned James Otis's rousing speech that spurred John Adams, that Adams even remembered 60 plus years later in reflecting on that speech and writing about it. And one of the central points of James Otis's speech was that that old phrase, man's home is his castle. And it's the same concept, this individualism that we have lost. If we embrace that, and we understood, you know, the concept of first do no harm, and we embrace that, wouldn't we be better off as people, like you said, learning from history and not doing harm to one another, honoring the individualism of one another? That's the parting thought for the day. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Stay tuned. Bless the pitch on the other side.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.